Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland. And with me today, members of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. They will be performing this weekend. That would be tomorrow night at 7:30. This is Thursday, right? And Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 with the Madison Symphony at the Overture Center. On the program, Brahms Symphony No. 3, Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Espanol, and most relevant of all for our conversation, Rodrigo's Concierto Andaluz. Welcome, members of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to hearing you both live and a spectacular recording, too, that you have of the Concierto Andaluz. I guess we can go ahead and delve into that whole part of it a little bit. When you have four guitars playing, you have certain kind of acoustical requirements, don't you, in order to make it as clear an experience for the listener as possible? For example, I was listening to the Rodrigo earlier today with a headset on, and it was a gorgeous way to listen to it. Do you think that is better than just hearing it in the hall? Want to bite on that one?
Well, that's probably mostly a testament to the recording engineer, our good friend Rob Friedrich, who's with Telarc, who does beautiful work. But the whole idea of having a quartet of equal instruments, it's sort of problematic, that we all pretty much sound alike, so we have to each have our own distinct sound, and it has to be presented in a way where each of our individual lines and personalities can come through. We did a sound check and rehearsal last night in the hall, and they have a fantastic state-of-the-art amplification system. I think it'll sound pretty nice in there as well.
When you say we have the same kind of instruments, yes, they're all guitars, but they look different to me. So you want to go through a little bit of the...
Well, classical guitars, which some people call them Spanish guitars, they come in two basic types, whereas like violins and that whole violin family usually use spruce on the top. Spruce is used on guitars, but oftentimes cedar is used as a wood, and that has a darker. People often characterize it as a more Spanish sound, and I think in this group we've got two cedars and two spruces. And we'll let you guys figure out which one.
Evenly spaced.
Yeah. Actually, I'm playing a spruce, and Scott's playing a spruce. Matt and Bill have cedars. And then, additionally, I've got a seven-string guitar, which is not, incredibly unique or unusual. But we thought that bringing it into the quartet setting would make a lot of sense to have one guitar that can at least, blow out the range a little bit,
right?
On the low end, especially, and it actually has a couple higher frets than on a normal guitar as well. So I've got sort of the low
and the high covered,
the long and the short,
almost like an extension you'd put on like a string bass or something like that. Yeah. I have to marvel. Do you all play when you feel like it? Seven string guitar. Is that not?
No, I've tried. I've picked up John's a couple times when he wasn't looking. And it takes some getting used to. I wouldn't say that it has a completely different feel, like it's another instrument, but it takes some getting used to. There are 8-string guitars too. Now that's another instrument. That takes some retraining.
Well, even with 7 though, the fingering is completely different, right?
No. The fingering's the same. You just have the one extra string at the low end here. So it just makes your thumb get a little bit lost at times if you're not accustomed to it.
Wider bridge?
Actually, a little bit. Well, yeah, overall wider, but the strings are slightly closer together than on a regular 6-string.
That's another thing that always amazes me, is how you can get your fingers in pretty small spaces and not just get them in there, but make it sound good.
This is nothing compared to a mandolin.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. Yeah, and those baritones and things that have the sympathetic strings packed in there, it's a marvel. And now the quartet itself has been around, the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet has been around for some 30 years, I guess, and formed in the Los Angeles area, as the name implies. And three of you have been together for a long time. For all 30 years.
John and Scott and I are the original guys, and Matt's been with us for over 6 years. We've only had two membership changes over the whole time. So maybe that's our greatest accomplishment. We've stayed together this long.
Well, even though brand new guitarist would be a professional, obviously, and know how to deal with a group. Still, you have to wonder if it would be a real advantage to have three of you having been together for 30 years.
I think there's a comfort level. We're friends. We respect each other, and we sort of almost have this telepathic thing going on now. We've played together so long,
right.
We kind of know what the next guy is going to do, usually.
Yeah. Yesterday morning...
They knew I was going to say that,
Yeah. Well, no, yesterday morning, we had to leave. We drove from Iowa City to drive up here to the hotel, and we had planned on leaving at 12, and myself and Bill and Scott, the ones who've been around for 30 years, we were all standing at the car waiting with, you know, fully loaded, and like, where's Matt? It was 10 after 12, and Scott had gotten up late and hadn't had breakfast and was ready to go, and so finally, you know, we texted Matt, hey, are you coming? And he goes, oh, I didn't know, I'm sorry. And he got down and he goes, sometimes I think you guys just sort of telepathically know when things are happening, and he's out of the loop sometimes.
And sometimes I just don't hear when they announce the departure time.
Well, it must, as I say, really in the broad sense, though, be an advantage. And yet, it's not as if you play sort of the same parts all the time. I gather that, you know, one can play the mid-range and then swap off, and then the next time around you're playing the high range. Does that help to keep it fresh for you?
That's the advantage of playing essentially the same guitar. I mean, John's 7-string, it's still basically a 6-string guitar with an added string.
Right.
So one advantage of playing 4 guitars is that, first of all, a guitar in itself is kind of a mini orchestra. You have quite a wide range already. Any of us can play any of the parts. We switch around a lot, you know. So in our arrangements in concert, you'll see a lot of times, if it's something we've arranged for ourselves, we're passing around the melody, sometimes quite rapidly, you know. So it's you kind of have to pay attention.
Now you have perhaps one disadvantage that, say, a violinist or even a cellist or a pianist certainly would have when it comes to sort of the virtuoso show part of it. And there's only, correct me if I'm wrong, so much you can do with a guitar to show, wow, I am really pulling off some licks here.
Well, yeah. The guitar is, you know, has its limitations, but, you know, we have our own little bag of tricks that we can do. what we, you know, and hopefully later on as we play some of the repertoire that we're working on, you know, the recital repertoire, the thing that I think we try to bring out with the quartet arrangements and pieces we do is how the guitar can really be a chameleon instrument. It can make lots of different kind of sonorous, you know, effects. We can evoke different musical cultures, and so the guitar really can go a lot of directions that, you know, a piano maybe necessarily can't. You know, so, you know, we understand the guitar's limitations, but we try to sort of take advantage of the potential that's there.
It's also just sort of a difference in, like, I mean, some things work really easily on the guitar and might really be difficult. There's a really good example in the Rodrigo Concerto that we're doing. The last movement, it's the whole Rodrigo Concerto is written mostly based on folkloric styles. The first movement's a bolero, and the third movement's what's called a sevillanas, which is a kind of it's a quasi flamenco form, and it has a Scott, would you demonstrate a little strum thing there?
Yeah, it has a lot of Rodrigo. It's written, you know, to imitate. With the guitar in mind, it's a natural instrument, of course. So he wrote this with the strumming of a guitar in his ear. So I'm tuned a little bit differently, but you have a.
Now, the point I want to make is that that's really easy to do on the guitar. But he wrote it for the viol. The string section has to do it also. And I mean, we played this thing 100 times with orchestra, and it's so difficult for the string players to do that
because they have to do this kind of ricochet tapping thing with a bow, and it's almost impossible. And we feel bad for them because it's like, yeah, we're just strumming away and
having a
great
time.
They're all
time.
Working hard.
Yeah. But to like rip through scales and at 32nd notes the way string players can do it, it doesn't work as well on the guitar.
And some composers know that better than others.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's hear that, Rodrigo. This is actually a fairly recent release, right, of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. And the first movement itself gives you plenty of Spanish qualities and certainly plenty for all four guitarists to do. And you're performing with the Delaware Symphony?
Yes, David Amato conducting.
Thank you.
we have the first movement, Bolero, from the Concierto Andaluz of Rodrigo, written in 1967, but performed, recorded much more recently than that. In fact, it's on the Madison Symphony program this weekend with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. They are, by the way, individually, Scott Tennant and Matthew Greif, John Dearman, and Bill Kennengeiser, and they, as I say, will be playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, the Rodrigo Concierto Andaluz, which requires, obviously, four guitars and orchestra. But they also have what they call some recital pieces, and they range very widely with these. We'll hear a couple of short pieces before the quiz question. They come from an African suite. Is there one composer for this African suite, or how did this come about? Because I noticed you credit different composers for the two pieces you're going to be playing.
Actually, I wrote the first tune, which is called Imbira, and a former member of the quartet, Matt's predecessor, Andrew York, he's a good buddy of ours and a very well-known
composer,
composer, wrote the second one called Djembe. And we did these years ago for a project we did with Sony Classical where we were exploring world music. We did everything from Indonesian gamelan music to klezmer to all kinds of stuff, South American things. And we thought it would be fun to do a few African pieces. And they're both named for instruments. The imbira is a kind of large kalimba, like a thumb piano. And we're putting something on our strings to get this sort of idiophonic rattle to the strings to imitate that. And the second one, the djembe, is a drum. And you'll see pretty fast why
You're going to give us play-by-play when you retool from one to the other?
Yeah, we can do afterwards. We can show you what's going on.
Okay, great. From the African suite. Thank you. from an African suite, and I have to say, very charming, both of them. In a minute, I'm going to ask Bill Kannengeisser where his inspiration directly came from. But first, we have to go to our 12:30 quiz question, and then we'll have more live music with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. Back to you, Bill Kannengeisser, and the piece that you composed there for an African suite. What exactly was your inspiration for it? Did you go to Africa? Did you get immersed
in African
music?
I hope someday we get to go to Africa. We've never gotten a chance to be there. Actually, Scott has this incredible collection of world music source material. And then when we were sort of kicking around for ideas of different kinds of cultures to cover, he shared some really fantastic recordings. I think that was a mbira player from Zimbabwe, I think. And you know, I guess the only sort of, it's a pretty straight ahead kind of groove oriented piece. What I'm sort of exploring is the idea of like overlapping rhythmic patterns. That's very typical for the polymetric kind of divisions that is in African music. But the more notable thing is what the sound we get, and it's so simple. You know, it makes the guitars sound sort of clangy. To me, yeah. They almost sounds like a steel drum a little
bit. Right.
And it's the simplest thing. You just take a standard staple. And you just bend the corners slightly at an angle, and mm-hmm. then that will fit over two strings. You sort of connect the two strings, so it couples them. So when you pluck one, it kind of makes the other one kind of rattle.
A little.
And if you know, you just set it in the right spot, and you get this lovely clang that sort of just made the guitar sound out of tune and weird enough to just not sound like guitars,
There were some other things going on there, too, though. It wasn't just the staple.
Yeah, actually, at the very end, when it gets really quiet, it's the magic of radio. You couldn't see it. John and I are actually playing. I hope I described this right. You know, normally you fret a note and you're plucking
below
between your finger and the bridge.
But you were above.
We were plucking on the wrong side, like between the nut, the head side.
Yeah.
So we're plucking the back side of the string. And there's only certain pitches that you can choose that are actually in tune. And so it was kind of a complicated. It's a very quiet sound, but it makes this, again, a kind of like sort of ephemeral.
Very crisp kind of sound,
yeah,
too.
I
was reminded a little bit, you mentioned earlier gamelan, and that reminded me a little of that, where you have this kind of constant, almost like the patter of rain.
Well, I did a piece a long time ago for the same project where we had to imitate gamelan, and there our guitars almost looked like they were having acupuncture. There were so many different things stuck to the strings, and it sounds pretty cool, actually, kind of a gong effect.
You also, I gather, from the next piece, you play some jazz, too.
This is an arrangement of mine, and it's from the famous Kind of Blue album by Miles Davis. It's the tune Blue and Green. And should I say a little more about
it?
Sure. Well, I do play jazz in addition to classical, and I love everything about it. In these arrangements, I especially wanted to kind of convey how a modern jazz musician will reinterpret an old standard differently every time they play it. So this is a little unlike the original recording. I mean, it's the same chord progression, same melody, but for instance, there's a little minimalistic kind of intro. Scott has a little solo that's kind of flamenco-oriented. So there's lots of textural differences that you wouldn't associate with the original recording, but I think jazz fans would still recognize it.
And Matt, you do an improv solo, right?
I do a little improvising in this one too. Yeah.
Okay, here we're going. So this is Blue in Green, originally by Miles Davis, is arranged by Matt Greif. Blue and Green by Miles Davis, arranged by Matt Greif, and performed by him and the other members of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, playing live in our Buck studio for the midday today. Back with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, and they're already warming up for the next things, which, as they say, will be completely different. There are only so many things, you know, written for four guitars and orchestra. Of course, you will be performing the Concierto Andaluz of Rodrigo this weekend with the Madison Symphony. There are a few other things, but you would think that the real pioneer in the guitar quartet and orchestra would be Los Romeros, and you've worked with them. They're kind of your professional godfathers.
They are, yeah. We all pretty much grew up with them. I certainly did. I met Pepe when I was 14, coming out from Michigan. He was giving master classes in Houston every year. My mom would take me out there. And of course, John grew up very close in San Diego, very close to where the Romeros are. And Bill, we've all known him for quite some time. So definitely our inspiration, yeah.
I just got out of high school, and I was a mostly self-taught, you know, kind of jack of all trades, you know, playing Neil Young and Allman Brothers and just messing around on the guitar. And I mean, I worked hard, I played a lot, but I didn't really play classical. But I was teaching in a music store, and I met a guy there who was teaching classical guitar. I was teaching so-called fingerstyle guitar, and I said, "Wow, you're really good. You know, how did you learn to do that?" He goes, "Well, I have this teacher named Celine Romero."
Yeah, well,
and I knew who the Romeros were. I had heard them before. And so he took me over and introduced me to Celine. So I was really lucky, just fell into it. And from there on, I just pretty much knew what I wanted to do. And then I ended up at USC a couple of years later because his brother Pepe was teaching in residence at USC. And that's where I met Bill.
Yeah, actually, I think how did that work? The Concierto Andaluz, was that their celebration for coming to this country? Did I read that somewhere?
Yeah, I think it was like celebrated the 10th anniversary or the 20th anniversary, I can't remember, of them all arriving finally in the United States. You know, actually, the patriarch of the family, Celedonio, was actually imprisoned by the Franco regime for a time. And, the kids somehow got out and made it to California. And then eventually he was freed, and the rest is history, as they say, because they became just a phenom in the music world. They played in the Ed Sullivan Show and for the Pope and the White House. And
how many recordings were Phillips, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, on and on. Yeah. Lots of stuff. One combination or the other, and occasionally all four of them.
Yeah.
Well, as I guess when we're talking about guitar music, Spain would really have the nod, wouldn't it? I mean, it really, the heart of it seems to have a Spanish accent.
Yeah, well, the root of so much music that's played on contemporary guitar comes from, you know, really old forms, and in a way that segues into the two pieces we're gonna finish with, which are two pieces from what you sometimes call the golden age of Spanish music. It's the Renaissance period, and it's part of a larger set that we play called Music from the Time of Cervantes, and the whole idea with this is actually we developed a stage production with actor, where the actor recites passages from Don Quixote in playing 12 or 13 different characters, and we accompany him with music from this time. And we actually premiered it about 3 years ago with John Cleese from Monty Python.
I read that. Yeah. How did that go?
John, it was fantastic.
John Cleese says, well, I could sort of see him as Don Quixote.
And, absolutely, yeah.
Did he do Dulcinea, too? Or some of the other characters?
He did 12 different characters, uh-huh. and I actually wrote the script for him, and he helped sort of Cleese-ify it.
Actually, isn't their cheese shop sketch pretty much, didn't he admit that a lot of their humor was sort of subliminally inspired by Quixote?
Well, there was one scene that in the book, and I was reading it in the book, and I said, you know, it's when Sancho's really hungry. He goes up to the innkeeper and asks for some food, and the innkeeper says, "Oh, we have any kind of food you want." And Sancho asks for all these different things. He said, "Oh, we're out of that. Oh, we don't have that this week." And I said, "It's the cheese shop sketch." But it was written. The joke was written by Cervantes in 1605. You know, so it's a really fun production. We've actually subsequently done it with this fantastic comedian named Phil Proctor. Some of you may know.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine.
Yeah, from Fireside Theater. We're touring it all over the place, and we just did a DVD of it that's coming out literally like next week. for Mel Bay Productions.
With Phil?
So, yeah, with Phil. Oh. He's a great friend of ours.
I'll ask him about that.
Yeah, so the idea is we do this stage show that's a, you know, it's a fairly involved multimedia thing with actor and lighting and all that. But the music we play, it's all, you know, based, it's all from 1600 or earlier. But to me, it sounds so contemporary, so modern, you know. And the early cousin of the guitar that was very prevalent in those days was called a vihuela.
Yes.
And so a lot of, I actually have a capo on the fifth fret of my guitar to sort of imitate that lighter kind of strummy vihuela sound. And, you know, this music, even though it's old, to me it sounds very, very fresh and vital, and it's a lot of fun.
It has a way of coming around, doesn't it, becoming fresh again. Yeah. So you'll be hearing, playing Folias, which is a very familiar kind of Spanish dance, and then what's the second piece?
It's called Hoy Comamos. It's by Juan de Encina. It's from the Canzonero Palacio. And Hoy Comamos, the words are basically, today we eat, today we drink, tomorrow who knows what's going to happen. So,
well, let's find out.
Same concerns they had then as we do now.
like that about some Spanish music. Just suddenly, guess what? It's over. Mm-hmm. Almost as if somebody turned a switch. Two pieces from the time of Cervantes. So this project that you're doing with Don Quixote is, you're not like in the Richard Strauss tradition trying to represent the action so much as just evoke the time.
Oh, there are times where it does, you know, like, not quite set up for it, but, you know, like when there's the windmill scene, you know, this kind of windmill effects, there's different. What we try to do is to have the music almost be like a film score to what's happening in each scene, and capturing the mood of what's happening. Like the Folias that we played, that's the time when Quixote and Sancho have their first like spat. Uh-huh. You know, they have a disagreement, and you know, Sancho says, "Well, forget you, I'm leaving," and Quixote berates him for being unfaithful, and the music gets very agitated, and then Sancho feels terrible and he apologizes, and this music becomes very plaintive, and that was sort of the idea to find moods and characters. Not so much word painting, but to match the emotion of what the actor's saying. And every once in a while, there's an inadvertent association with the words of the song. The piece we used to set the windmill scene,
really?
The original, has the line, "I pierce the sail with my lance." So every once in a while, it worked out pretty well.
I say you probably have a future in silent films.
There you go. Look out, the artist.
Yeah, right. There you go. Coming soon, the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet in the film industry. What do you have in the works, though, for projects other than playing this weekend with the Madison Symphony?
Well, we have a big project. We're premiering next Wednesday in Virginia. A good friend of ours, a Japanese composer named Shingo Fuji, it wrote a new piece for us for four guitars and guitar orchestra, and we're playing it with 60 high school kids in Virginia, and then at four different festivals. One will have 220 guitarists behind us, and it's sort of in memory of the victims of the tsunami from a year ago, and it's a piece inspired by the seasons of Japan. And Shingo's flying out from Japan to conduct it and teach the students. And it should be a really wonderful experience, you know, to have all these guitar players on stage with us, sharing the experience, and also, you know, thinking about the victims of what happened a year ago and, you know, enlivening the spirits of my friend Shingo.
Well, they used to do that kind of thing with pianos, you know. They used to call them monster concerts in this country back in the 19th century. I've never heard it being done with 260, or in your case, 264 guitarists.
Yeah, if we can get in tune, that'll be a miracle.
Well, I was going to say, but, you know, I've heard some strings concerts. The strings are very traditionally strong program in parts of Wisconsin, and it's strange when you get like 200 or 300 string players, the kind of tonal center of gravity works out somehow.
Yep, yeah.
So that will be quite...
Well, we'll see what happens.
Quite spectacular.
Yeah.
Now, this Brazilian album of yours, is that... Since the Rodrigo, or is that before that, the CD?
The Rodrigo was the last thing we did. The Brazil was before that.
So, but both of them pretty fresh off the press, and we'll be getting to that in a moment. Well, thanks for joining me this afternoon for the midday. Members of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, including, let's see, in this order, it would be Scott Tennant, and then we'll have Matthew Greif and John Dearman and... Closest to me at hand, Bill Kennengeiser.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.